of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senate Bill 47, we heard from Paul Snyder and Brad Swank on this, I believe, last week. This is the bill that deals with the interest on fines and fees that would be going into an account for court facilities. Mr. Snyder asked that we, and Mr. Swank asked that we push back the operative date on this from July 1, 2003 to July 1, 2007 because of the difficulties in figuring out how to calculate the interest on these. And I will say that, that part of the difficulty is because of the way our statute is set up. Each time a fine comes in, portions of it go to different accounts, different areas, and they're having a hard time figuring out how to apply that for this facility's account.
Bunch of whiners. No whining. Anyway, okay, no amendments to this bill, but they do need some time to get their act together. All right? So I hear a motion. We're in work session.
Do we want to pass this?
Well, I don't want to, but we probably should, because I don't want to listen to Paul Snyder the rest of the session.
Mr. Chairman.
No, I was ready to make the motion, but then I realized the vice chair was here, so.
Yeah, but I could never. Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 47 to the Senate floor with the pre-pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 47 unamended to the floor of the Senate pre-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And who wants to carry Paul's water on this one?
I'll do it.
All right, Senator Burdick's going to carry Paul's water on this one. Paul, thank you for your tolerance here. And let's see, next up is Senate Bill 69, one of the larger bills this session.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we heard from Timothy Travis on this bill last, on the 2nd. This is the bill that changes words in the juvenile code. It's from the Oregon Law Commission, and I actually did look through this, and it does merely change words like ward. There's nothing, no hocus pocus in this. When we had our hearing, Larry Oglesby, one of the juvenile directors or heads of the juvenile department, had some concerns that in changing these words we would jeopardize federal funding. Nancy Miller made some phone calls and made sure that that is not the case, and got the word from the feds that the funding is based on the fact of jurisdiction, not what we call it. And so there's no problem with that. They said a rose is a rose.
All right.
And it's the dash one amendments, Mr. Chairman.
And we have not yet adopted them. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I missed the scintillating testimony on April 2nd because my notes indicate I was testifying on a bill in another committee. But why the heck are they changing all these words? Is there a legitimate reason for it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walker, I believe there is a legitimate reason, and it is continuity. When we have, as you know, juvenile has its own language, basically. Right. A child is not necessarily what you'd think of as a child. And when we have a code that's been revised over the years and added to and subtracted to, it becomes, we're not consistent throughout it. And so, actually, the Oregon Law Commission has done a lot of work in making sure that this is consistent and does have the same language throughout.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Burdick.
Suppose we're talking about words. I think the phrase is added to or subtracted from.
Thank you. What did I say?
Subtracted to.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And there is, you should have a section by section analysis here.
Yes.
Whoa.
With a dash one amendment.
I'll take that home for bedtime reading.
That's good, because you're going to carry this
over.
All right, Senator Burdick, you'll do me the honors.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 69.
Great. Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 69. Is there a discussion? Any objections? Hearing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
I would move Senate Bill 69 as amended, otherwise known as the No Hocus Pocus Act, to the Senate forward with a due pass recommendation.
No Hocus Pocus Act. Senator Burdick now moves Senate Bill 69 as amended before the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? There's none. Motion passes, and Senator Walker will be the carrier of that fine piece of legislation.
Right.
If you have any questions, get a hold of Tim Travis and he'll enlighten you. Work session, Senate Bill 308.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 308, we heard testimony on some time ago. Let me check the date. Back on March 6th, we heard from Al French of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. This is a bill that has been amended substantially, and Jane was good enough to do the dash one amendments in an engrossed bill. And when we heard 308, there were two sections. The first section dealt with discovery of witness and victim information to a defense attorney or a defendant. And what it made, the bill made clear, is that personal and financial information of a victim or witness should not go to the defendant. And specifically, the bill referenced personal financial information that was used and defined in the Identity Theft Code. The amendments, what I was going to say is Section 2 was going to open identity theft and allow for verbal representation of a person, if it was false, would be grounds for an identity theft prosecution. That section has been taken out, and the personal financial information has also been amended so that it would not include a photograph, because it's clear that in these cases the defense would need to have the photograph. But what it does now is it says that personal financial information should not go to the defendant, and that would include things like driver's license number, social security number, tax identification number, alien identification number, employment status or employer, place of employment, identification number from an employee, maiden name, check numbers, deposit numbers, signature. This was also, we got a fiscal back, and the fiscal at this time has been determined indeterminate, should be minimal. You should have a copy of that as well. And as I recall, this was at the request of the district attorney down in Jackson County, Mark Huddleston, who had a situation where this personal information was received by a defendant and used in some criminal manner.
All right. Yes, Senator Brady.
I was looking at this fiscal where it says the impact would be from 0.75 FTE to 1.5 FTE for the Indigent Defense Services. And it says, you know, it ranges from 36,000 to 72,000 for a full biennium. So, you know, just what is that all about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, Ann's here, and she can talk to that if you'd like her to. My understanding is it has to do with what approach you're taking to how to calculate this, meaning I think the larger number was arrived at when the public defender's contractors looked at how much, an estimate of how many employees would be needed to black out this identification. But I know that Ann got information from also some of the district attorneys that they say that they black it out before they give it to the the defense attorneys. And then the fiscal, or the Ann also did a what she called a more conservative approach, where she averaged out the costs. I don't know if Ann would, Mr. Chairman, if you want Ann to speak to that. But it's a difficult, as many of these fiscals are, it's a difficult thing to pinpoint. And what I've been told is that in many cases, the DAs are going to be taking the and doing this for them, and really, I think the place where it would really take some time would be in a large identity theft case where you had several victims. That might, you know, be where you'd get the person hours.
Seems to me the value to victims would be almost indeterminate, too, in the sense that you don't re-victimize someone through some identity theft or other problem.
Also, Mr. Chairman, I see I have a hand in gross version in my file, but I see no actual amendment.
I don't have the amendment either, so I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. I must have.
That is.
Let me make sure we've got those. And if you want, I can make sure we can hold off and we can get a copy of those.
Okay. Why don't we do that? We'll close the public for the work session on 308. So we get the amendment. And then we'll go to 348. Let's do the work session on that. Make sure we get the dash line amendments to 308.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and now that you mentioned that, I want to make sure you have the dash one amendments to 348. And then Jane hand engrossed this bill, so let's make sure we got those.
I don't.
Okay.
I have the hand engrossed, but not the name.
Oh, I've got the
name. Oh. Maybe they were attached to the other one, too. Does it work?
Uh-huh. Yeah, we do have the...
Okay.
No, wait a minute. They are attached.
No.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, do you want to... Should we take a
five-minute
break?
A five-minute break. We'll get our act together. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Are we skipping over?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I handed out the dash ones, hopefully. Okay, now I'm going to check Jane's work and make sure.
I have done that.
And it looks you've got them there.
Okay. Anybody want to move the dash one amendments? Senator Burdick.
I will move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 308.
All right, Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 308. Discussion. Is there any objection? There is none. The motion passes. Okay. Senator Burdick.
I move Senate Bill 308 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick now moves Senate Bill 308 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objections? Hearing none. So ordered. Let me see. Senator Farioli, would you carry that one?
I will, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then we'll go into our work session, Senate Bill 348.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 348, you should have the amendments, and you should also have the engrossed bill. And I should say that the amendments replace the bill. This bill came to us. I'm going to make sure I've got it. Okay, here it is. Senate Bill 348 came to us, and we heard testimony on it back in early March. And as it came to us, the bill would have basically had enhanced fines for a person who drives a motor vehicle under the age under intoxicants and is a passenger under 18. This bill, as originally drafted, amended recklessly endangering. Recklessly endangering is a crime that you could use if someone is driving recklessly and has a passenger. The Dash 1 amendments change this bill so that the amendment would be to the DUII bill itself. And the reason for that is driving under the influence of intoxicants is not always reckless, meaning in a prosecution for recklessly endangering, you'd have to prove, obviously, being under the influence of intoxicants would be the main factor, but you have to show something else like speeding or erratic driving, something like that. And so I thought that amending this would make it clearer that, you know, it would more technically, correctly, or appropriately do the intent of the bill. So if you look at the Dash 1 amendments, and if you have it, it's page 2 of the Dash 1 amendments, or right, on the Hannah Gross bill. Let me see. It says, notwithstanding ORS 161635, a court may impose a fine of up to $10,000 on a person convicted of a driving while under the influence of intoxicants if the current offense was committed in a motor vehicle and there was a passenger in the motor vehicle who was under 18 years of age and was at least 3 years younger than the person driving the motor vehicle. So that amendment makes clear it's only for motor vehicles. Again, technically, you could be DUII on a bicycle, technically. It is a vehicle. So this makes clear it's only for motor vehicles, and it puts in an age limitation so that there is a that we're not having a situation with two young people. It's the same age limitation that we would have in like a consensual sexual relationship between juveniles. So that's how the amendment is changed. And then on page 4 of the Dash 1 amendments, this section would make clear that if a person under these circumstances who is driving under the influence of intoxicants in a motor vehicle with a passenger who's under 18 and at least 3 years younger than the person would not be eligible for diversion. And that would put it with the other situations where you would not be eligible for the diversion, which would be if you cause physical injury to a person or death of the person, or, of course, if you have a prior DUII within the last 10 years or a current pending DUII.
All right. And do we have a fiscal?
We have a fiscal. There was no fiscal. I want to make sure. Let me. Now that I'm getting my fiscals here.
Well, the revenue statement says.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know that we have the fiscal, but I did speak to the LFOs that reviewed this. There would not be a fiscal on this because we're not aggravating the sentence as far as prison beds or jail beds. We're just making the fine larger. And there would be no impact for diversion either that they mentioned to me. I don't know, Jane, do you know if we have a fiscal statement back? No. So that was just the oral representation that I got from LFO.
All righty. Senator Burry.
Council, we had testimony from MAD and the criminal defense lawyers, and the moving it from the reckless driving statutes to the DUI statutes changed anybody's position, you know, on that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, I don't know if it changed. The defense attorney Susan's here and could speak to that. And I spoke to Senator Metzger's office, and they were supportive and wanted us to do this amendment. And I don't know if they, his LA's here, Eric, and I don't know if they talked to the people from MAD. So,
Susan, do you like the amendment or not? I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to support it anyway. But
Susan Russell, on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyer Association, we believe that this Dash 1 amendment addresses our concerns. We opposed
hallelujah.
It now, no longer take a position. We believe that it was more appropriately dealt with in the DUII. So.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank
wow.
You.
Awesome. Senator Burdick. Senator, would you?
I happily move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 348.
All right. Criminal defense lawyers are happy. I'm happy. That's good. Senator Bernie Booth.
Your name is on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 348. Is there a discussion? I appreciate the work on the amendments, by the way. Any objections to the Dash 1? There are none. Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Brady.
I move Senate Bill 348 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick now moves Senate Bill 348 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none. So ordered, and we'll see if Senator Metzger would like to carry that.
You are also on this bill.
Mm-hmm. I know, but I'm a full service chair. All right. I know, but I'm not going there. Senate work session, Senate Bill 426.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 426, we do have a fiscal on this. There are no amendments, so I want to make sure I got my papers right. The fiscal on this is that it's minimal and indeterminate. This is the bill that would add parking, people who enforce parking regulations to assault in the third degree. Assault in the third degree is a crime that has had people added to it who, if you committed a physical injury against them, it's a felony. And that would be currently they have youth facility people, emergency medical technicians, I believe we added taxi drivers, and also the, I don't know what you call this, when you slime a person at the prison, meaning if you spit or put some, it's gross, a dangerous substance, but that's what it's for. I won't go into that too much. We would add parking officials to this because of the nature of their job. And I'll note also that there is some written testimony on this from Nolan
Mackerel,
City of Portland. So that's the 426.
All right. Nolan Mackerel, do you want to come up? And I think we had a kind of a brief hearing on this initially, so it might be helpful to give a little bit more background. Nolan, if you just state your name for the record and then proceed.
Nolan Mackerel.
Mackerel, sorry.
Mackerel.
Apologize.
It's okay. It's mispronounced a lot. Sorry about that. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today regarding Senate Bill 426. For the record, I'm Nolan Mackerel, Parking Enforcement Supervisor with the City of Portland's Office of Transportation. I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before you on your committee on Senate Bill 426, which creates the crime of assaulting a parking enforcement deputy a felony. Today, I wanted to talk to you about three things. First, what the bill does. Second, what the problem is. And third, how this bill solves the problem. First, let me describe what this bill does. It would make a physical assault causing injury to a parking enforcement deputy while in the course of their jobs, a third-degree assault, a felony. This would provide the same degree of protection currently provided by law to bus and taxi drivers, youth correction facility staff, paramedics, and children under 10 years old. This bill is being supported by the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I regret that no one from their office could be here today, but they would be happy to submit a letter of support should this work session be continued. And secondly, let me tell you about the problems our parking enforcement deputies often face. Deputies are hit and pushed and grabbed by citizens, often even spat at. Citizens also intentionally aim at them with the intent to hit them with their cars or throw objects at them. Examples of some of the many objects are beer cans, eggs, whole fish, and other food items. On several occasions, deputies have also had life-threatening objects, such as planters thrown at them from several stories above. Some of these have resulted in worker compensation injuries, and deputies are also threatened and harassed verbally on a regular basis. Because the deputies don't have have the specific status this bill would provide, these assaults are misdemeanors and not usually prosecuted. On several occasions, persons who perform these assaults then brag to others that they have done this with no repercussions. Finally, let me explain how this bill would go a long way towards solving the problem. We need to inform anyone who would consider assaulting a deputy that this is a serious offense. By establishing this crime as a felony, we do this and ensure that violators are prosecuted, and the word would spread that this is a serious offense. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue, and we would appreciate your help to protect our public servants, and please support this bill. And I have any, I'm available for any questions.
All right, thank you, Mr. McCrill. Senator Walker, any questions?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCrill, your testimony indicated that this happens on several occasions. I continue to be shocked sometimes about human behavior, but when I'm reading the fiscal analysis of the bill, it states here, the Criminal Justice Commission contacted several communities with parking enforcement personnel who indicated no more than one assault per year may occur. Yet you're indicating that this occurs more frequently than once per year.
Chair Minnis and Senator Walker, it may only occur in other jurisdictions maybe once a year, but in the past year or so, it seems that people's tempers or aggressions have increased, and our need to contact the police to come and provide us assistance has increased over the last year or so, and which also prompted us to want to change the designation for assault because of the increase of the nature and also the number of the population that's in Portland to bring this forward and be the same as like a TriMet driver sort.
Well,
another question?
Well, you could just make a comment about Portland, but I won't.
Oh, Senator Walker, please don't restrain yourself.
I thought my community was known as an anarchist community and whatnot. But anyway, thank you for your testimony.
Well, we could make it legal in Eugene.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, it coincides with the installation of those horrible machines in little parking meters. I wouldn't want to go into confessionals or anything, but I'm sure they raise the frustration level.
And, Mr. Chairman, we could make it after the first offense in Portland.
First one's free.
Or you just make the parking deputies police officers. And then.
Or animal control officers.
Yeah. All right, Mr. McCrow, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We are in work session. There are no amendments to the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
I would move Senate Bill 426 to the Senate floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 426 to the floor of the Senate with a due-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Burdick? Would you? Or you've already given, I've already assigned you one. Is there anybody else that would like to carry the bill?
It's a Portland bill.
You do? Okay. All right. Senator Burdick will carry Senator 4. And next up on our parade here, Senate Bill 564. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 564 is Senator Atkinson's bill. I know I saw him, but I don't see him any longer. This is a bill that we heard testimony on from a Corporal Gettings from, I think, Grants Pass, and Senator Atkinson and Susan Russell back on March 18th. And you'll see the dash one, excuse me, I've given you the dash three amendments. And at the request of the chair, I made some technical amendments to this bill, and I want to note them. If you look at section three of the bill, this would make some changes so that a person commits the crime of assaulting a law enforcement animal if the person knowingly causes serious physical injury to or the death of a law enforcement animal, knowing that the animal is a law enforcement animal. And the injury or death occurs while a law enforcement animal is being used in a lawful discharge of the animal's duties. That portion, lines 14 and 15, Susan Russell and I worked on together. She wanted to make sure that this would not be applicable in a situation where the dog is being misused and is attacking someone who's trying to defend themselves. So she spoke with me about that and had that amendment changed. The statute would then set for the Crime Justice Commission this as a Category 6 crime, and then a Category 8 if the person causes the injury or death while resisting arrest or attempting to elude an officer in control of a law enforcement animal, and then makes a definition of law enforcement animal to include a dog or a horse. I talked to Senator Atkinson's office and the officer who brought the bill, and they are satisfied with the Dash 3 amendments, as is Ms. Russell is happier with them.
Not thrilled or elated, but happier with them. And what is our fiscal on this?
It's again, we're having a indeterminate but should be minimal. And this is one of those, Mr. Chair, that I think from my own experience would be rare to see a case like this. And I think that's the reason for the minimal. It's just hard to predict.
All right. Committee, discussion?
And also, Mr. Chairman, I should say, one could already be prosecuted if you kill an animal like this under our current animal abuse statutes.
Okay.
It just changes the elements a bit and would make it a C felony and in a different, instead of an A misdemeanor.
Okay. Any other discussion in the committee? Yeah. Senator Ringo?
Well, just a comment. I am not a big fan of creating crimes, increasing penalties, and certainly not because I condone the behavior. It's just that I'm not convinced that increasing the penalties is a deterrent to people that are already operating outside the law. The testimony that we just heard on the parking patrol folks said, oh, the word will get around that, this is a serious crime. I didn't buy that testimony. I don't think the word will get around. I think it creates another place where if somebody fits into a narrow niche of misconduct, they could be spending 10 years in jail. And that doesn't condone misconduct. I don't think that the answer at all to this bad behavior is to increasingly ratchet up the penalties. And I'm going to vote for this. I felt the need to vent a little bit that I don't. I just don't think this is a productive exercise. Our country has 2 million people in jail right now, and it's a horrible time in our society. And so, what do we want to do? Keep putting more people in jail?
Yeah.
They're satisfied with that.
Okay, Council.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to, Sir Ringo, raise one point. I wanted to make one. There was an error in the fiscal on 426 that said it was a Class B felony with up to 10 years. These are both Class C felonies. They would carry up to a maximum of 5 years. I just wanted to make that clear. And that also it would go into the grid that Phil Lemon and the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission work on, and it's would be based upon your criminal history, and there would be definitely an opportunity for probation for a first-time offender. I understand your concerns. I wanted to make sure that you hadn't read that fiscal, or if you had, that I corrected it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And actually, Senator Ringer, I would comment that I agree with you to some extent that criminal statutes probably should focus more on conduct and intent as opposed to who the actual target is. To a degree, I mean, that's in its most pure form, but we probably have a time where we need to begin to start looking at our criminal statutes again and looking at many of them and asking whether or not they make sense. You get into that same discussion with aggravated murder categories where reserve police officers don't meet the definitional status of police officer, and hence killing a reserve officer isn't an aggravated murder charge. And so there are little nuances like that in the statute itself. This happens over time. Senator Burdick?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, certainly in principle I agree with Senator Ringo, but I like this bill because, you know, we're putting these animals in harm's way for law enforcement purposes, and I think that our whole society sometimes tends to really trivialize, you know, harm to animals in a very bad way, and I think this sends a message that a working animal has as much stature as a, not as much stature, but has enhanced stature because they are working animals, and we are choosing the person in the harm's way.
I just want to know where Kelly Peterson is on this bill. She hasn't been around. All right. Any other comments, Senator Walker?
Mr. Chair, I was reviewing my notes from the last hearing, and there was some discussion about when the animals are not on duty, whether they should still have that protection. And I noticed in the bill that the change that's been made, this applies only when they're in the lawful discharge of their duties, so it does not...
Mr. Chairman, sir, that's correct. It would only be in the lawful discharge.
Just at home.
That's correct. And backyard. Also, it would only apply when the person knows that the animal is a law enforcement animal. So that kind of goes along with the same thing. I remember the testimony, mm-hmm. too, that they were concerned about, I guess for better word, retaliation. This bill would make it only when the animal is being used in law enforcement and used lawfully.
I'm okay with that, I guess. I just think that they're a law enforcement animal, and if they're at home and someone knows that and they do a drive-by shooting and kill the dog, they should be prosecuted for it. If everybody else wants to go along with it, I'll...
Well, Mr. Chairman, they're already going to be prosecuted for it because they just killed an animal.
Right.
I think the question is whether, because they're the dogs in the course of their duty, somehow that should put some potential offender on notice that they had not messed with a dog. And the testimony that we heard from that corporal was that they would send dogs into narrow crawl spaces or into houses to essentially ferret out suspects, and that those people would be shooting at the dogs, beating them, and I think that's a situation that this is intended to address.
Right. Well, truth is, we don't make perfect law. That's why we come back into session frequently. Okay. Senator Bray.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 564.
All right, Senator Bray moves the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 564. Is there any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion? Objection to the motion passes.
Chairman?
Senator Bray.
I would move Senate Bill 564 as amended to the Senate floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Bray now moves Senate Bill 564 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due-pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? No objections noted. Motion passes. We'll ask Senator Atkinson to carry his bill. All right, and now we're going to shift into bills that are worked by Mr. Joseph, Senate Bill 332, work session. Mr. Joseph.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, if you recall, Senate Bill 332 deals with writs of garnishment issued to employers. The employers were seeking reimbursement for a portion of the costs that are incurred when they administer those writs. Usually they have either staff who's dealing with paycheck issues and payroll issues, or they have an independent payroll agency that they're working with, and they incur costs to have those writs administered and to garnish the wages of their employers. What we have is Dash 3 amendments that you should have in front of you, which address a number of the concerns of various parties, including the Bureau of Labor and Industries, needed one of their statutes amended. The Dash 3 amendments accomplished that. It's my understanding that that there is a gentleman here who has some concerns that the fee might not be quite high enough because some of the costs are quite expensive, but the Dash 3s leave the fee, as I understand it, at $1, which is what we were talking about before.
And that fee accumulates per, I think it's per week, and that would be part of the deduction that comes out of the employee's paycheck who is the garnishment is subject of.
All right, and this is a work session. Who is the person that wanted to chat on the issue? You want to come up and tell us what you think for a couple of minutes?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. I'll be absolutely as brief as I possibly can. In my hand, I hold a writ of garnishment. I'm a small business employer in Southern Oregon.
Sir?
Your name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Steve Mitchell. I'm from Medford, Oregon. And I've worked with dry cleaning associations with Senator Harper. And about 4 weeks ago, I brought this up to him, and he recommended that I do come to the committee and mention a few things. House Bill 2274 is the law, and it's been amended this session, and it's here waiting to be heard in the House and the Senate. And the garnishee, which is me, the employer, shall prepare a supplemental garnishee response for garnisher and debtor. The writ of garnishment comes to me, and it demands that I do these things, or else I'm going to bear the burden of paying the bill. Now, that was the first thing that sent me back to the Credit Association, General Credit Service Incorporated in Medford, Oregon, and I really complained loudly to them, and their comment was is they didn't like the way the bill was written themselves, and I said, well, would you help me change it? And they immediately wrote me a release from this particular garnishee, but I do have others. And the thing that happens here is the law allows private enterprise to come to me and House Bill 2274, there's 13 pages out of 31 that I have to deal with in filling out reports and things of that nature to go back to the credit collection company. And it really takes my time.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Ringo.
The House Bill 2274 you're referring to is currently pending?
It's amendments to House Bill 2274. It's waiting to be heard on the Senate side now. It's gone through the House already.
And that bill amends the garnishment statutes?
Yes, it does.
I think that's it.
But it doesn't do anything about the fees.
I think it's in our possession.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the thing that happens with that, there's 13 pages in here that I as an employer have to deal with. Our corporate attorney yesterday told my wife that it takes them about a couple of hours, and they have a lot of attorneys that call them wondering how to deal with garnishments and what have you. And my problem is I have a payroll company that bids our payroll and our quarterlies and everything to do with payroll. When I call them and ask them to add something to their computer, they charge me immediately $6. And then each paycheck that they cut, and our payroll goes twice a month, that's a $3 charge for each paycheck. And that doesn't include the time that we spend reading through all these things and mailing and things of that nature. I didn't know that Senate Bill 332 was here until Mr. Joseph informed me two or three weeks ago, because I'd been following 2274. And when I read this and it said $1 a week, I just thought, gosh, my initial cost just with my payroll company is $12 for the first month, and that doesn't include all of the time that we have to put into it by reading and going through the hoops. So I only wanted to bring that to the attention so that it might help you in your deliberation. And to go on, just a couple more things that I might add to that. The sheriff gets $12.50 just for serving this to a population of less than 400 people. And the server in my community, a private enterprise that serves a writ of garnishment to me, he'll get $16 just to serve that. And then the attorneys that deal with it, they get their money up front. The credit company that has this thing sent to me, they get their money up front, and they tack it right onto their bill. The other thing that disturbs me a little bit is that we have to deal with the employee directly by taking it out of their paycheck, and they look at us as the bad guy because we should be helping them, and which I did in this one case. I went and I really complained about it, and they released it, and it really surprised all of us. But with that, I'll get away from here and let you finish your deliberation.
Well,
I just wanted to bring to your attention that there are higher costs for we, the private enterprise, the small business people, than a dollar a week.
Currently you can't recover any costs.
Pardon me?
Currently you cannot recover any costs.
Absolutely correct.
So a dollar a week is better
than nothing. That's better than nothing.
Right. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bill, do you want to say anything on this? Well, you know, it's your peril, I suppose, going on.
For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association. I just wanted to say that I think the Child Support Division just left. Oh, no, she's back. Their amendments are in line 13, 14 on the first page. That was the dash ones that we'd spoke about earlier. The dash twos are on line 9 on the front page. And so as of right now, I think everybody that we've talked to is satisfied with the way that this agreement has worked out. And I hope that the dash threes get adopted and move on.
All right. That's Senator Walker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Perry, could you speak to the last witness's concern that a dollar a week is not enough? How is it that you decided on just a dollar a week?
Senator Walker, Chairman, is the basically what I've been working on this for about the last year and a half, just trying to get something. And in essence, what I wanted to try to do is find something that the labor groups were okay with, the collection agents were okay with, their employers. And obviously this doesn't make everybody happy, but I think the way that it's ended up coming out is it satisfies the most amount of people and hopefully will at least give us some reimbursement. And I can say for the record that I never want to deal with wage garnishments again in my life. But for the time being, it was a group that's been working together to try to satisfy the most amount of people.
Well, and it is a Senate bill, and I think it could be noted that even though it is at a dollar, it's not covering full costs, and flag that issue. But I don't know that I want to hold the bill up to.
No, Mr. Chair, I'm not interested in doing that. I just wanted him to address that because I do know that Mr. Perry's been working on this, and anybody who steps into the garnishment statutes steps in at their own peril.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to fix those in the 99 session, and they're just a mess and mm-hmm. very difficult to deal with. So I appreciate your work and trying mm-hmm. to get everyone to agree to something.
Senator Ringel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, from my perspective, I expressed support for this concept during the last hearing because I do understand that there's a burden on the employer. On the other hand, I mean, where's the money coming from? The money's coming from somebody who already is barely squeaking by. They're already under collection pressures. They're probably not even making their car payment or their house payment. And it bothers me to have the discussion come to you. We need to think about recouping full costs. I think a dollar is in some ways it is only a token amount, but it's somewhat meaningful. I just remind the committee that David Niebel testified at the original hearing in opposition to even a dollar, because the money is coming from some working man or woman who's already getting hammered financially. And the only reason I bring that up is I hope you're not here next session and saying, okay, we got a dollar last time and now we want to go to full cost. So tell me what your reaction to that is, Bill.
Senator Ringer, Chairman, as I stated before, I hope I never deal with the garnishment issue again, and it's not my intention to ever deal with it. I've made basically agreements with everybody that this is all I'm after, and I will never step in the middle of this again. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. I mean, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I mean,
sure.
I understand from on one hand, they'd say, look, they shouldn't bear the brunt of this, but, you know, there are certain responsibilities that go along with being an employer, and I would really hate to see this become a foot in the door of, all right, we're going to shift more and more costs to the working person.
Right, right. All right, thank you, Mr. Perry. Appreciate that. Yeah, I think when Mr. Niebel was testifying, I think I asked him whether or not it was more prudent to keep some of those people employed, too, because some employers might choose not to continue employment given the burden of filing paperwork, et cetera. So.
Or, Mr. Chair, the other thing is if the expenses become too high, then people just get jobs as bartenders. They get paid under the table, and the creditor never gets a nickel.
Right. All right. We're in work session.
Mr. Chairman.
All right, Senator Burdick now moves the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 332. Is there any additional discussion? Any objections? Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
I move Senate Bill 332 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick now moves Senate Bill 332 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Ringo, would you do the honors of carrying this piece of legislation? Thank you very much. And then our last bill is on pre-verification issue. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 356, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 356, if you recall, dealt with truth verification, lie detectors, and versus voice analysis, if I recall. You should have in front of you the Dash 1 amendments, I believe.
Dash 1 amendments, yes.
Okay. And I do have a fiscal analysis here, but it looks like providing that the amount of licensing that's going to take place is accurate by what's anticipated, that the licensing fees will take care of any costs with establishing the testing procedures, that type of thing. And with respect to the Dash 1 amendments, I just got them recently, and honestly, I have not looked at them in detail as to what they do.
All right.
They did not come through me, I don't believe.
Is Mr. Powell the Sheriff's Association?
He just walked down to go through.
That's unfortunate. All right, why don't we recess for about 5 minutes and see if we can find Mr. Powell. We can clarify some of the amendments.
One and not the other, why not regulate both or don't regulate either of them? And I think the difference is the evidentiary weight given to them in certain circumstances.
Well, Senator Bray.
So I gather from your statement that under current law, the polygraphs are regulated, and this would just keep the same thing.
Correct. And there was some concern because the original law in its form that you're looking at it now, before we pass the Dash 1 amendments to 356, there's some concern that the voice stress analysis, because it's a newer technology, does not quite fit the definition, and there was some concern as to is it regulated, is it not regulated, if it is regulated, what are the licensing requirements, and the Dash 1s would specifically clarify that issue and say only polygraphs are being regulated. Voice stress analysis and hopefully new technologies that come out will not have fall into the regulatory scheme, so this issue hopefully will not keep coming before the committee as we have new technologies. But polygraphs, because they still are admissible in post-conviction proceedings for certain individuals, are still subject to regulation.
All right, and we have in our possession, I think, letters from the Oregon Chiefs of Police endorsing the concept, Oregon Sheriff's Association, Sheriff of Union County, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, John, do you have any additional testimony you'd like to add? Sorry for making you run back up here.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is John Powell. Before you, representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Mr. Chairman, everything the council said is accurate. The voice analyzers currently are not prohibited from use in Oregon, but if you read subsection 6 in these amendments carefully, you will notice that the only way you could use one is if you had the person basically hooked up to a polygraph machine at the same time. So by changing this definition of what a polygraph examiner means, it will allow the use of a voice stress analyzer outside of this definition. And as counsel has told you, there is a little bit of difference in admissibility, and however, both are relatively equal in their exactness.
At least, okay, great. Senator Walker, do you need an update on the program?
Well, I heard part of it in my office, but not all of it.
All right. In essence,
transition.
If you look at the Dash 1 amendments, there's at least some language that speaks to licensure, and it's been told that the least of that language allows for the use of the voice stress analyzer, but it continues regulation of the polygraph examination, but does not regulate the voice stress analyzer, in which apparently fiscal now goes away. In other words, the voice stress analyzer now becomes an instrument that can be used for investigative purposes, but is not regulated by this.
Chairman, isn't that what was the case before? As long as you've taken it out of the licensing, I don't understand why we need to bill.
But, Mr. Powell, you were suggesting that voice stress analyzer would have to be accomplished under current statutory scheme at the same time of public.
Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, that is correct. If you read the current definition of a polygraph examiner, it means a person who purports to be able to detect deception or to verify truth of statements through the use of instrumentation or of a mechanical device. So the only way you could, under current law, use a voice stress analyzer is if you were at the same time administering a polygraph exam. What this does is allows the administration of the polygraph exam under this definition, which takes out mechanical device and instrumentation and says what a polygraph is. So that would allow the voice stress analyzer to be used in investigative work under Oregon law. Yes, and Oregon is one of 7 or 8 states that currently there is question over whether you can use voice stress analyzers. All other states you can't.
So the bottom line is the bill just simply clarifies existing statutory schemes that it could be allowed, but it isn't regulated.
Mr. Chairman, and the use of these voice verification analyzers, if somebody flunks that, is the practice to set them on to a polygraph, which is more tested and more admissible?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Burdick, it would be used as an investigative tool, probably to see if you wanted further interviews with this person, whether it be a polygraph or not. I'm not certain. There is a very a close connection between their variability, the variability of the results. There was a polygrapher who attended the first hearing who mentioned a Department of Defense study that showed these devices were only something like 51% accurate or something like that. We failed to finish the report, which said that a polygraph scored at 53. So they're fairly close.
All right. Great. We're in work session. Would anybody care, at least for Senator Corcoran's purpose, since he's the sponsor of this bill? I don't want to make him no. Move the dash.
I can't actually
comment.
I'll move the dash one.
Senator Burdick moves the Dash 1 amendment. So 356, Senate Bill 356. Any further discussion? Any objections? Hearing none.
Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
Senate Bill 356 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick now moves Senate Bill 356 as amended before the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Political dissertations, diatribes, et cetera.
Okay. Mr. Chair, it's clear that this is still inadmissible evidence. It's just a diagnostic tool.
Correct.
Under that scenario, I don't have a problem.
Right. No objections? Motion passes. We'll ask Senator Corcoran to carry his bill. Thank you very much. And no other business before the committee, although because the weather's getting a little better, by the way, the chair is entertaining the thought that we're going to maybe change the times that we're meeting
especially
on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, to 7:30 in the morning, and on Thursday at 9 o'clock in the morning. So we'll only meet for an hour, an hour and a half on Thursday. Golfing season.
7 what?
7:30?
We're adjourned.
That part's a joke, right?
They just can't get up early. What's the problem with them?